It tore me up, man. You know, I will not coach again in my life.
That's Jerry Land talking to Channel 3 after the charges were dropped. To hear David reporting against him for the allegation that he made a gun threat at Para back in April during kind of a disagreement over a baseball game where I guess he had, you know, as one of the coaches, had thought that one of his kids had been mistreated. And, you know, he said some salty words and then he got ejected. And in the process of getting ejected, the umpire was kind of walking with him towards his truck. And, you know, he said, "You best not come with me to my truck." And then the umpire went back, and then sometime subsequently, apparently there was a report that he had made a gun threat, and there was an evacuation, and there was an alert that went out, and we all thought that's what had happened. And now, you know, and he was charged, okay, with causing a disturbance. And this is, if you don't know the air, this is at the Para Sports Complex, right off Five Points in Pace. Anyway, Pace Athletic Recreation Area. You know, Association. Every time I hear that word, I misunderstand what it means, because I'll talk to Brad Becker. He's like, "Yeah, Para, they do this." And you know how Brad talks. And I love Brad. And I always think, like, Paralympics, Para. You know, that's what it makes me think of, because that's the only context I ever hear that prefix. And, well, that's just the name of the facility, the Para. Anyway, so he got charged. And, you know, now, what, 8 months later, charges get dropped. He said,
"To start with, what happened is the kid got run over. I went out there and I told him it was wrong, and I told him he was a punk B, you know, and he says, 'You're out of here.'"
Yeah, I don't think he said B. He knows he didn't say B, you know, salty language, right? Okay, fine. You get ejected. You're trying to stand up for your kids and stand up for safety, but, you know, you can't call the umpire names. I assume he's talking to calling the umpire the name. Anyway. And then the following out to the car part
was following me to my truck. So I said, "If you follow me to my truck, you're not going to like me." Never. I mean, I never said anything about a gun. I was like, "Man, I'm getting out of here."
So he claims that then they kind of, or the umpire and maybe some other people kind of congregated over there by the base. And a little while later came the allegation about the gun and the threat and all of that. And, you know, that's where we got to where we are now. What's interesting is, you know, gun was never found, right? Good reporting by Channel 3 about this. But the analysis of this is, even, you know, what he actually said, what he says he said, it had nothing to do with the gun. And since there's no gun found, that kind of holds up. So there would be no charge. There would be no, I mean, issue at that point. You know, "Don't follow me to my car" is a pretty standard thing to tell somebody who's following you to your car. And, you know, the very vague, like, "If you follow me to my car, you're not going to like me much," is, you know, that's a pretty bland comment in First Amendment world, right? Now, that alone wouldn't justify a charge at all. Well, what if he'd, you know, made a threat? "I'm going to shoot up the place." Oh, you cannot say that. You cannot say, "I'm going to, you know, shoot people. I'm going to kill people. I'm going to kill you." There's all kinds of things you cannot say. Direct threats you cannot say. But even the report indicates that he wasn't even accused of saying that. It was a, "If you follow me, I will get my gun." Now, this is interesting, and I appreciate Channel 3 doing good reporting on this. Florida Statute 877.03, only if this is a memo that had to do with the case in the motion to dismiss, is limited so that it only applies to words which by their very utterance inflict injury or tend to incite the immediate breach of peace or present a clear and present danger of bodily harm to others. Contingent threats are not fighting words. Contingent threats are warnings. "If you come on this porch, I'm going to shoot you." That's not, "I'm going to shoot you." That's, "Stop." Now, can you shoot somebody for coming on your porch? Generally, no. They've got to constitute an actual threat to you. So would it be illegal to shoot them for coming on your porch? Probably. But, you know, it's funny, you can make contingent threats to do illegal things, and the making of the contingent threat itself is not illegal. For example, you have all seen, I'm sure, on people's fence posts or their gate, you know, "If you loot, we shoot," or, you know, "Can you outrun my Smith and Wesson? Or one that I thought was kind of funny the other day was, it takes my Dobermans 3 seconds to get to the, you know, fence. Are you faster than they are? I think it's probably less time than that. 3 seconds is a long time when a dog's running. But, you know, contingent threats aren't threats. You know, come join the bodies buried out back if you cross this line. That's, you can't shoot somebody for coming on your property unless you reasonably believe and can articulate that they are a danger to your life or limb or somebody else. So, you know, trespassing is not a capital felony. So you can't, you know, but you can put up the sign that warns you will do an illegal thing. That's not illegal. Okay, so in this case, you know, if you follow me, I'll get my gun. That wouldn't even be illegal. That's just saying, hey, there's a gun in my car. You'd best back off. That's a warning to brandish. That's a warning. You know what I mean? It's not an actual brandishing. It's not an actual threat. Kind of like if you, you know, it's like what every dad thinks he would tell his daughter's, you know, boyfriend. If you hurt my daughter, you know, I have a shovel and friends, right? And a shotgun. Well, that's, you can say that. Would it be legal to shoot him if he, you know, breaks her heart? No. Can you threaten it? Yes. Because it's contingent. That's the difference. Anyway, so yeah, charges have been dropped, and I can totally understand that his whole life has been upended over this and ruined about this, and it's awful. It's an awful thing. And he wants apologies, and that's pretty understandable. John Pickens is out today. We've got PJ sitting in for him with Traffic on the Fives. PJ?
Traffic's brought to you by Executive Landscaping. Executive Landscaping has joined Russell Landscape Group, combining trusted local service with regional strength to deliver exceptional landscape construction and maintenance. 770-446-3552. Still working that disabled vehicle, I-10 westbound, right near I-110. Use caution through that area. Also, a vehicle crash, I-10 westbound near Avalon in Milton. They're saying the roadway's clear. I'm PJ with your traffic on the Fives.
So it is December. Christmas is coming. Christmas is now actually only 3 weeks and, you know, 2 days away. I mean, it's very close, okay? So it is, unfortunately, for many of you, time to start thinking about Christmas gift giving. And let me say that Pensacola Hardware, though it is a great place to buy hardware, and it genuinely great place to buy hardware, they have a fantastic housewares section with all kinds of, you know, you want cast iron skillets that are the best? They have them. You want grills and cutlery that's the best? They have it. They have Yeti merchandise. I mean, all the Yeti you could pop, more Yeti than a person could ever use in 10 lifetimes. They have all kinds of stuff. And all kinds of, like, SEC merchandise. So if you want to go there to buy a gift for somebody, and all kinds of stuff I haven't mentioned, okay? They've even got two websites. It's actually PensacolaHardware.com and, I forget the other one all of a sudden. But it's also, it's the same thing. It's just one is for the hardware and one is for the houseware stuff. Wonderful place to go and shop for your Christmas people, especially if you're hard to get. And, you know, it's okay to treat yourself, too, because they have outstanding stuff. Pensacola Hardware, right downtown at 20 East Gregory Street, helping people remodel, rebuild, and build Pensacola since 1851. Somebody texts in related to the Richard Land case, the alleged gun threat that has now been dropped, charges against him. Somebody says, I'm guessing that not all contingent threats are treated equally. A contingent threat against a school, or I would say a contingent threat against, for example, a political figure, might be treated with more significance than in this situation. And fair. Yeah, no, I think that's probably right. There might be cases where even a contingent threat could be legally problematic for you. 621 on News Radio 92.3. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Every National Guard member deployed in Washington, D.C. is now armed. The Pentagon made that announcement yesterday after last week's shooting of two service members near the White House. Of course, one was killed. The other remains in critical condition, but has been showing some improvement, as we learned yesterday.
Do you happen to know, I have not asked the question or looked, do you happen to know if they were armed? Because people were armed. There was return fire, right?
I actually do remember a report saying that both of those service members were armed.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay,
I believe they weren't expecting anything like that to happen, and they were caught off guard.
Right, and I know a lot of times, you know, most times, in fact, when National Guard is deployed, they either have no weapons at all, or they have, I mean,
limited ammo.
Or they have no ammo. I mean, you know, sometimes they're deployed with empty magazines. You know, it's just for show. And, you know, clearly under the circumstances here, it would make more sense the other way around. But, yeah, I was just curious if you knew the fact. But thank you. I appreciate that.
I believe the reports that I saw, they were armed, but they maybe had sidearms, not rifles.
Yeah, that seems familiar to me, too. Yeah. So, all right.
So that's what's going on with that. Over 200 million Americans apparently did some holiday shopping between Thanksgiving and Cyber Monday. That's according to survey out from the National Retail Federation and Prosper Insights and Analytics. Not it, huh?
Not it. I had no part in this. If there's any any great bump in the GDP on Cyber Monday. It was entirely not related to any activity by Andrew McKay. So,
well, good to know that. The Trump administration threatening to withhold SNAP benefits from Democratic states. Many blue states have refused to give the administration data, including the immigration status of food stamp recipients. Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins said her department will use that data to root out fraud.
All right. Very good, David. Thanks so much for the update. I don't know if y'all have been paying attention to this Trump account story, but this is amazing. You know, President Trump has put in place his policy where any kids that are born basically during his second administration, you can open a kind of a savings account, a sort of an IRA in their name. And, you know, you can, the government will give you $1,000 in their name. Now, there's all kinds of limitations on the account, including, you know, it's not, you cannot tap any of the funds until they're 18. It's going to get invested in broad-based stocks. It's a, you know, not meant to be a speculative high return account. It's, you know, it's meant to be just, you know, something to start to build an investment nest egg for them for, so that when they're 18, they will have access to it. And then once they're, I'm a little hazy on a couple of these details because I've read a couple of different descriptions of this and it's not 100% clear to me. One seems to indicate that they can just kind of access it when they're 18 and use it for whatever. But the other is that once they're 18, they can only use it for a very specific things like college tuition, professional training, buying a home, or starting a business. They can also choose whether to withdraw the money or to continue to invest the money. Along the way, you can put $5,000 per year into the account that will be kind of an investment seeding thing for them. But it's only, you know, you're going to be able to start signing up for this next July 4th of 2026. And again, it is only for kids. I think it's, you know, like kids born kind of recently or through the end of his term is what they're promised with. Well, now Michael Dell, you know, founder of Dell Computers, they have come in and they have pledged $250 to Trump accounts for the first 25 million children 10 and under. So it's not the ones who are getting the 1,000, but it's the Trump accounts for anybody older than would be eligible for the 1,000. They're going to put in $250. I mean, it's only a $6 billion gift. $6 billion. About a third of the GDP of Escambia County, if you want to think of it that way. Don't worry, you know, Michael Dell will do okay. He's worth, what, $148 billion? So, I mean, he's got it to spare. A billion here, a billion there. Eventually, it's real money. But good Lord, that's an amazing thing. And they, you know, talked about it yesterday.
You know, we believe the smartest investment that we can make is an investment in children. We are confident that others will join us because we all understand the incredible impact that a gift like this can have on the lives of young Americans.
Yeah, I mean, there's no two ways around it. The savings account for the kids is, you know, quite an amazing thing. I mean, the cost, you know, don't just ignore the cost, but for the recipients, it's great. Having an IRA for kids is great, basically an IRA or a 401k. And then, you know, also them putting in a quarter of that amount for the next 25 million kids. If there's more than that, it's based on first come and youngest will get priority. So anyway, amazing thing. You just got to give $6 billion that somebody just decides to give away on a Tuesday. PJ's got traffic on the fives. PJ?
There is still a disabled vehicle, I-10 westbound near 110. Use caution through that area. Also a vehicle crash, I-10 westbound near Avalon in Milton. They're saying the roadway is clear. And then finally, Highway 90 is clear from Milton to Pace. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
All right. Thanks so much, PJ. Oh, best story of the day. Like the funniest story of the day. Did you hear the one about the raccoon in the liquor store? So, animal control, not here. Oh, man, I wish it was a Florida story. You know, some stories are like they're Florida stories and you wish they weren't. This is one, man, I wish it were. This is Ashland. Okay, so in Ashland, Virginia, this is how their post reads. Black Friday break-in at Ashland ABC store. Suspect apprehended after liquor-fueled rampage. On Saturday morning, Officer Martin responded to an unusual call at the Ashland ABC store. Upon arrival, she discovered the suspect had broken in, ransacked several shelves, and then passed out in the bathroom. The suspect, a very intoxicated raccoon. Officer Martin safely secured our masked bandit. Nice. and transported him back to the shelter to sober up before questioning after a few hours of sleep and zero signs of injury other than maybe a hangover and poor life choices. I love this person who's ever their PAO. It's good. He was safely released back to the wild, hopefully having learned that breaking and entering is not the answer. Well, I don't know. I think he learned that breaking and entering is a whole lot of fun. And all it's going to do is get you a stern talking to and release back into the wild. So how is he deterred? A big shout out to Officer Martin for handling this chaotic scene with professionalism and good humor. Just another day in the life of the Hanover Animal Protection. The best part of it is the picture. There's two pictures. Picture on the left is, think of your average liquor store. Because he fell through the ceiling, like a ceiling tile, apparently. So average liquor store, but with about, I don't know, 15 or 20 bottles of whiskey and gin and tequila broken, strewn about the middle of the floor of the aisle. Second picture is in the bathroom. Next to the toilet, passed out face down on the ground, is the raccoon. He literally drank him. I love that he went to the bathroom. Like, he knew he was supposed to go to the bathroom to take care of this problem. Oh, I'm going to be sick. Where's the bathroom? It's just, oh, man. Is he in college? I don't know. It's these are the questions that you want to ask. So they say it's not the first time this year that a raccoon was found in a place it shouldn't have been. In May, a raccoon was found, not to be one-upped or anything, with a glass methamphetamine pipe in its mouth sitting in the driver's seat of a car in Ohio. Just when you thought the raccoon could do no worse. Okay. The vehicle was pulled over because its registered owner had an active warrant and a suspended driver's license. This is Springfield Township PD at the time. I didn't.
I have talked to are feeling the same.
So this was at the most recent Escambia County School Board meeting. You heard her identify herself as Kim Garman, an ESC, exceptional student. What's the acronym for that? But it's actually kind of fun. I had lots of thoughts about all of this. But, she teaches kids. You used to would have called them gifted or disabled. Now it's exceptional student education, which refers to anybody kind of outside the norm, although nobody wants to say it that way. Which I've always thought is crazy that advanced and struggling, kids with either abilities or disabilities, that those were both lumped in under the same umbrella. Like, that's just weird, okay? But you're talking about emotional disabilities. You're talking about autism, speech and language impairment, hearing and visual, emotional, or behavioral. I mean, like, all of that stuff, okay? That's ESC. That's the primary, topic. And so she's saying, look, we are overwhelmed. At least I am overwhelmed. My fellows are overwhelmed. Fellow teachers are overwhelmed teaching these kids.
ESC pre-K teachers now have students with significant behavioral issues staffed into our VE classrooms with students who have autism or intellectual disabilities.
Just again, terminology, VE is varying exceptionalities, okay? So in special education, kind of classroom for students with a wide range of disabilities, but that's just, you don't get caught up on the terminology. I'll keep giving them to you as she uses them because, when you're in this world, you're so used to speaking a certain way, to kind of like military people are so used to speaking a certain way that you don't think that people don't. And obviously the school board knows the meanings too.
With students who have autism or intellectual disabilities, they are placed in classes that contain students with more severe disabilities who are not always aware of their surroundings and do not realize they need to move out of the way of a behavioral issue. And we are not given the behavioral support we need to be able to teach our students safely. I worry about my students being safe sometimes.
Okay, so you've got one kid that's got a behavioral disability or, cannot control himself, okay, under the sort of nicest term. And then, anger, hitting, that kind of stuff, spitting, kicking, biting, okay? Normal. I mean, not normal, but, common enough. And then you've got a kid with autism. And that can mean all different kinds of things. But, the autistic kid doesn't know to just get out of the way of the kid with the behavioral disability. So they bump into each other and the kid with the behavioral disability starts biting and kicking the kid with autism. Well, that's a problem, right? Okay, that's kind of what she's getting at.
Typically, the teacher beside me has her room trashed at least twice a week with cabinets turned over and their contents thrown around the room. Both the teacher and her ESP are using their bodies to block students with behavioral issues from throwing items directly at other students and are pushing and hitting them.
Again, ESP is an education support professional, teacher's aide. Okay, you would have called them maybe back in the day. Okay, and they're not able to handle all this.
Throwing items directly at other students and are pushing and hitting them. She spends the majority of these 2 days addressing behavior and loses time out of the other 3 days as well to behavioral issues. Two of her students are extremely aggressive and hit, kick, and try to bite other students as well as the teacher and her ESPs on a daily basis.
So it's hard enough to be teaching children with disabilities, or what we politically correctly will call ESE, right? That's the broad umbrella we use these days. It's hard enough, but when you do not have adequate staff, adequate resources, adequate, you know, class size, number of people that you're responsible for, the problems become exponentially harder. And that's what she's talking about, she's saying, is going on in Escambia County Schools. We'll come back to this in a second. John Pickens is out today. PJ's got traffic on the fives.
Traffic brought to you by the Pensacola Little Theater. Get your tickets now for It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play. A holiday classic reimagined as a 1940s radio broadcast at the Pensacola Little Theater from December 12th through the 22nd. Still working that disabled vehicle, I-10 westbound right near 110. Use caution through that area. Also a vehicle crash, I-10 westbound near Avalon. They're saying the roadway's clear. Back to you.
All right. Thanks so much, PJ. I appreciate it. So back to the conversation that Kim Garmon is having with the Escambia County School Board at the most recent school board meeting. And by the way, if you teach in this domain, either you directly teach ESE kids or you just know enough that you can comment, feel free to text me that, you know, hey, she's right, hey, she's not. I've talked to some people who say, no, this is really a problem in Escambia County. That's why I'm covering it. You know, anytime a teacher comes to the school board and says, hey, y'all, this is a problem, I want to pay attention, because that's got to be pretty difficult to do to begin with. You know, you'd be worried about, I mean, you shouldn't have to be worried about, but you'd be worried about job security, retaliation, your superior chain of command, assistant principal, you know, whoever might not take so kindly to you, you know, whistleblowing, so to speak, of a problem that's going on. But obviously, if you're a school board member or the superintendent, you're not aware of this, you want to be aware of this problem, right? Okay, so back to Kim Garmon talking to the school board.
Our administration team and the PBIS coach are doing their best to respond to behaviors around campus, but it is not realistic to expect them to respond to so many children with so little support. We actually have 5 VE units at our school as well. In addition, we have an unrealistic amount of paperwork we are required to complete.
And a lot of that paperwork has to do with, we talked about this previously, that PBIS stuff, the positive behavioral interventions and supports, and, you know, the things for which schools had recently gotten some awards where they were, you know, bronze level, silver level, or gold level. But, you know, dealing with all of that is a challenge in addition to just dealing with the underlying stuff.
In addition, this staffing paperwork, it takes 4 to 5 hours to complete now.
What?
If I complete it at school, that would take all of my planning time for a week. So I'm now spending an excessive amount of my personal time doing paperwork at home. Even worse, we will be assigned staffings to complete the paperwork, even though the department knows the student will not be enrolling in our class.
So not only do they have excessive paperwork for the students they actually have, they have to fill out paperwork for students that they know aren't even going to be in their classes because they've been told that they're not going to come because they're going to do homeschool or some alternative education or something like that?
Every ESE pre-K teacher I have talked to has these same concerns.
Everyone she knows, and again, this is, I don't have personal experience, but from the secondhand accounts or accounts of people that I know, you know, they're all saying this is not just this, but this is worse than you think.
We need an ESE task force to address these issues. We need to be looking at this and seeing what we can do to improve this, because we are losing teachers and staff right and left, and it's hurting our kids. Thank you for the time. I appreciate being able to speak.
So she is pretty frustrated. And how long and how deep does the frustration have to go get to before you go to the school board like this in public, right? So she's asking for some kind of a systemic review to look at what they're doing and what more do we need? What can be done differently? How can we make it better? Because this is not just about the, you know, happiness of the teachers, which is important, the health and safety of the teachers, which is important. It's about the effectiveness of them teaching the kids who really have the disabilities, and the ones who might be categorized or miscategorized improperly into ESE, and also, you know, the safety of those kids too. I mean, this is big stuff. Like, this is very important. And so I asked the question, you know, text me, 437-1620, text me if you know anything about this. Somebody here says, I used to teach. People will use ESE to categorize kids far too often. It's a golden ticket as they get many waivers, others don't. I'm all for adapting to meet the child, but when a child has a disability for being nothing more than a knothead and gets passed for disruptive behavior, it causes undue stress in faculty and other students. You know, what's the difference between a real disability versus somebody who just chooses to do bad? That's, you know, just because somebody misbehaves doesn't mean they have a disability. They might just be, you know, bad actors, right? You know, and that takes discipline, not adaptation. There's a totally different approach for that, right? Somebody says, let's see, I have, it's worse than you can imagine. So this person deals with physical therapy related autism. I've been with a case of 5 adults for 1 child during a behavioral issue. Wow, that takes that much. Wow, okay. Somebody says, let's see, I have an unpopular and controversial solution to behavior problems in schools. Bring back corporal punishment, bring back male authority figures. Children of all ages and abilities understand that concept. I think that would solve for some things. You know, we saw like the men coming back to be involved at like Pine Forest High School, you know, that seems to be working really well. I don't know that that's going to be your solution for your genuine, you know, behavioral disabled or, you know, mentally disabled, cognitive disabled kids. I'm not sure about that. But, you know, for a lot of kids, it would certainly work. Somebody just says, amen, I'm looking for my way out. Like, they don't want to do this anymore. Somebody else says, my wife teaches kindergarten and the discipline issues are taxing on her and her co-teachers. Students who act out are taking instructional time away from the well-behaved students who need their attention and help. I mean, if you're a, you know, if you have any kind of a disability, you know, a learning disability of any kind, you know, you need extra attention. And it's probably not the case that they've got just a lot of surplus time in the day, you know, for meeting the needs of the kids who really have needs you need to meet. And then they get derailed every 5 or 10 minutes, or you got kids just screaming in class, or kids who, you know, bite and kick. And, you know, PJ, you and I've talked about this. I don't know how much you want to share, but, you know, I know people. I have a good friend who teaches, and she's like, it's awful. And she doesn't even teach ESE kids. She's just teaching kids at a, you know, a Title I school, but still, you know, she's like, it's way more horrible than you can imagine.
Yeah. My wife's a teacher, and it's a challenge.
And does she teach ESE kids, or does she teach, you know, sort of normal classroom? Or
yeah, she teaches both.
Okay. All right. So this is a problem. I mean, I think it's a very reasonable request for her to say, you know, we need to have a task force to look at this, to really look at, you know, are we serving the kids effectively? Are there kids who are miscategorized into this environment? Are there the proper resources for the ones we do need to take care of? Or are we just, you know, pretending this isn't real? So I will tell you, you know, I have a really good friend that is a teacher. And, you know, she's always trying to get me to cover education issues in Escambia County. And to her credit, and I'll be honest, part of the reason I don't cover more education stuff is, all the stuff I already cover. I mean, seriously, you know, like one more thing. But education is so important. But the other reason is because I often don't know where to start. You know, covering the school board meeting is fine, but that's going to sort of gravitate towards these, you know, high emotion conversations about like banning books and stuff. And, you know, are we being too pro-gay in the class? I mean, social issues like that, that's not the meat and potatoes of education. That stuff, honestly, compared to what really matters in education, that stuff is completely superfluous. A couple of books here or there in the library, or, you know, a couple of pride flags here or there in the classroom is, I mean, the least important thing that happens in the schools. Whether you love them or hate them, I think you'd have to admit that. But how do you start with, you know, what, 60 schools in Escambia County? How many in Santa Rosa? 40? 30? 40? You know, how do I even get my hands around, my brain around trying to assess? Because when people are complaining, is it a fair complaint? Is it statistically valid? Does it hold up across the school? You know what I'm saying? Like, and in my job as a radio show host, I feel very stifled about this. And it's one thing to get the superintendent on, and Keith is very amenable to come on and talk with me. That's not an issue. But that's part of the reasons. I just, like, where to start? The monster's so big, and the problems are so varied, and the, you know, each school is going to have its own shape to this problem, right? But I will say this. I've never heard anybody say that these concerns are misplaced or wrong or inaccurate of the people that I have talked to. In fact, they all say kind of what PJ's wife says or what the texters are saying, which is it's way worse than you can imagine, and she's only telling you the short superficial headline of it. So I support us. Some kind of task force makes sense to me. Give me a better suggestion, because what we're doing right now does not seem to be adequate. 6:54 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. If you are, and by the way, we podcast all the hours of this show, so this will be available on the podcast if you want to share it with people. The 6 a.m. podcast we do by hour on newsradio923.com or the app at News Radio Pensacola. So if you want to share this with other people, just, you know, in about 10 minutes, PJ will have it posted on the website. Hey, if you're thinking about that next vehicle, Frontier Motors has a great selection of good quality used cars, cars that are 1, 2, 3 years young, maybe 4, you know, low miles, like 10 to 40,000 is kind of their sweet spot. Cars that you're going to drive for a long time, and that they all warranty. They warranty all the cars to 100,000 miles or 10 years because they know they're selling you good cars. They can stand by them. You know, Dave Ramsey recommends them. I recommend them. The bumper stickers and license plate frames recommend them. But just the way they treat you as a customer is like somebody they want to see again. And so they want you to be happy, not just at the moment you buy, but next 6 months, next year, 5 years from now. They want you to really like them because they want you to come back again and again, and it shows in the way they do business. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi. Traffic on the fives now with PJ.
There is a disabled vehicle, I-10 westbound, right near mile marker 12, near 110. Use caution through that area. Also, a vehicle crash, I-10 westbound near Avalon. They are saying the roadway's clear.
6:58 News Radio 92.3. Two more texts came in on the subject of the challenges that the you would have preferred, you used to would have called them special needs teachers, ESE teachers are facing in Escambia County schools. These problems may also exist in Santa Rosa. I just do not know. But, you know, I suspect probably, you know, somebody says yes with 4 exclamation marks. This is very systemic. We need more bodies with the teachers who are working with these kids. Those that can learn are at a disadvantage because those kids with the highest disabilities demand attention. We pray every day for things to get better. Somebody else texts in, I work here and the problems are widespread. Years ago, the pre-K had separate units based on needs for autism, behavior, VE, physical impairment, like different units basically. Then the powers that be decided that all inclusive is the way to go. So now it's a melting pot. So all the problems are thrown in together in one place. Man, that seems like a catastrophe to me. I agree, and many of the other fellow professionals agree that more specific classes are best practice. They allow for specific interventions, teaching strategies, and similar peers to be taught. Unfortunately, this is not just a pre-K issue. We are seeing it across the elementary grades. Behavior issues are on the rise and stem from a variety of issues, nature and nurture both. All right, well, there you go. I mean, confirmation that it is a problem. What to do about it? I am open to any suggestions. I'm absolutely open to any suggestions. Somebody else just texts in, thanks for covering the teachers in our community. We're doing an incredibly difficult job working to just not just educate students, but also work with mental and social issues. It's so important, I admit. It's hard to, you know, yeah. I wish I could do more. I really do. I wish I could do more. Local talk.